for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Mikhtar. And we are discussing how can we encourage our children to be helpful to others. So what we have discussed so far is that encourage empathy, help your children understand and, you know, relate to the feelings and experiences of others through open conversations or through storytelling. And then Brother Mikhtar also said that you should lead by example. You yourself should do the charity works yourself or help others one or the other way. And then also encourage your children by yourself leading as an example for them.
Another point as well is to help our children be helpful. Sometimes you have to realize that children don't necessarily know how to do it or don't even have the opportunity to go and be helpful to others. Obviously, in their own environment and their own limitations that they have, they might not necessarily have the opportunity to help others or to be beneficial. And therefore, as parents, we should make a point to create opportunities for them to be helpful. Obviously, not forcing them to do so. Don't force them to give away their pocket money, for example, or forcefully make them sacrifice an ice cream, for example, that they really like, or a toy that they really like. But creating an opportunity, creating an environment where they themselves can do some good work. So, for example, taking them to a charity organization, for example, where they can do work with themselves. Or, for example, a water distribution, help them to place a stall, for example, where they can give out water or distribute water, or for example, get them involved at mosque where they can help with the cleaning, help with basically any activities that involve them to physically help out and to give time and sacrifice and effort towards a voluntary and charitable cause. This will create slowly not just a habit, but an understanding that this is something, a very important trait that we need to build in ourselves. And generally, whenever there is an opportunity to train them and to teach them that, look, if you were to be helpful, this is very nice, this is a very positive thing to be helpful, even if it requires to sacrifice.
Right.
Have say it in a conversation, explain to them, advise them. Don't force it, don't make them feel bad if they don't do it, but at least you've shown them the perspective and you've encouraged them that this is how a mu'min would do things, that they would help others, they would take any opportunity to be useful to others, and therefore, even if it comes through sacrifice. And also with that as well, even teach them even little things. It doesn't necessarily have to start with huge and big projects. Sometimes even like
you distributing their own toys.
Exactly. Cleaning on their own toys or distributing their own toys, or even smaller than that. For example, you're walking in the street and you see a stone on the street or a thorn on the street, for example. Just picking it up and putting it on the side. In fact, we have a hadith from the Prophet that says that if an abd of Allah would enter paradise because of a thorn that they removed from the path of the Muslims. This is a hadith from the Prophet that it is possible for a mu'min to enter, a servant of Allah to enter paradise by this very, very small action of doing what? Of removing a thorn from the path, from the road where another Muslim would have come and gotten hurt. So,
dear listeners, if you really teach that to your children, that would really help them in future as well. Like, it helped my husband to get married to me because my husband was taking my father to a majlis, and that was the time he was supposed to get selected or rejected for me. What happens on the way, he stops his car and then goes back and then puts up a stone and then keeps it aside. And then he's asked by a neighbor who's also traveling with my father and my husband and says that, we had left. It was not necessary that you go back. He said, we left that place, but maybe what about others who were supposed to be coming from the same path, coming back from the majlis or, you know, whatever, and was the midnight. And that's what made him to get selected for me. So we'll discuss more after a short break. The listeners, stay tuned.
Ya Muqiyya Al-Khayrat
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and Brother Miqdad is with us, teaching us how to teach our children to be helpful to others.
One last point before we close up this chapter and this question. We have a hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin who says that عَجِبْتُ لِرَجُلْ يَأْتِ أَخُوهُ الْمُسْلِمِ فِي حَاجَةٍ فَيَمْتَنِعُ عَنْ قَضَائِهَا وَلَا يَرَى نَفْسَهُ لِلْخَيْرِ. Amir al-Mu'minin says that I'm very surprised at a person when a Muslim brother comes to him requesting him for something, for a help, and this person rejects, doesn't go and help him. He refuses to help him. وَلَا يَرَى نَفْسَهُ لِلْخَيْرِ. And he doesn't see in himself any goodness in himself that he should go and help.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the Imam is pointing to a very important concept that, again, we've talked about in previous shows as well. That doing these good things goes back to how much we see ourselves as worthy, how much we see ourselves as important and respectful, how much self-respect we have for ourselves. We've said this before as well. A person who gives respect to themselves, a person who gives value to themselves, they're more likely to be helpful to others. They're more likely to assist others. They're more likely to give importance to others as well. They have nothing to, they don't count themselves as unworthy. And so when we talk about helping, how do we help, how do we teach others, and how do we teach our children to be helpful to others, is by giving them this self-respect, by giving them this importance to themselves, by making themselves feel full in their own cup. A person and a child who's full in their own cup, they're ready to share with others. They themselves don't have this feeling of being needy and humiliated and unworthy. When they don't have this feeling, they'll be more likely to help others.
Right.
So one of the important ways to help our children help others is to give them the self-respect, give them self-confidence, make them feel important themselves, and they'll be ready to share with others and be helpful to others.
Right. In all the series of these discussions that we have discussed so far, like there were some questions, how we can help our children not to lie and be truthful, how we can help them not to use foul language, how we can help them to be, helpful to others. In all these series of questions, I think one point that was really common was to encourage self-respect in your children. Do not humiliate them. That's what's going to give them importance. And if they have that self-importance and self-respect, they are likely to be more worthy for the society, for themselves, for their parents as well. Thank you so much, Brother Miqdad, again, for those beautiful tips. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
Islam my deen,
Allah my Lord,
His word Quran,
Muhammad Prophet,
praise be upon,
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Sayyid Mustafa with IRIB English Radio, and you're listening to Youth Station. And with me is my co-host.
Yeah, I'm Beta, and I'm really glad to be here again at Youth Station with you.
One of the issues that I think that a lot of us want to learn about is our own sort of capabilities, right?
Yeah.
What are we capable of? And I should mention that I'm actually studying psychology here in Hausa.
Yeah.
And one of the topics that comes up is this very topic. You know, it is the official term for it would be self-awareness. To what extent are you aware of your abilities, your skills, and how to utilize them in life, right? What would you say, sister, would be the best way to go about in recognizing your abilities, your skills?
It's a really difficult question because I think life is about finding this way to know more about yourself. And the thing is, at first I wanted to, at this point, that I love psychology. And this is one of my favorite parts of study. And, I think sometimes we neglect to know more about the psychological aspects of ourselves and our personalities.
Right.
And this can be the underlying reason for many more mistakes that we are making.
Right.
And about this way of knowing more about yourself, I think making mistake itself is one of the best ways to know more about your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
When you are facing obstacles, when you're facing dealing with some difficulties in your life, and
yeah,
you are actually going through a rough time, this is the time that you can know more about yourself. This is the time that you can test yourself. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes I feel like my life is somehow really normal. And there is an obstacle. Everything is kind of normal.
Well, that's very
and
good for you.
I'm
how
thankful.
Lucky.
Yeah. I'm thankful for that. But sometimes I'm looking for challenges to test myself more and more. And sometimes I call myself a workaholic person because I actually arrange this challenge for myself as work and study more and more and more. And this may be somehow harmful, but this is one of my methods.
Uh-huh. That's a good way to do it. One method that I would say is to actually jump into things, is to actually do and try different things, especially
yeah.
if you're young, you know, if you're a teenager in your 20s, I would say try different things and learn about different things.
It's a bit dangerous because we have no boundaries. If you tell me do whatever you want, but
I'm not,
test everything,
I'm not saying do whatever you want.
Yeah, I know. I know. But testing different feelings, sometimes you feel like you have to feel some emotions that may be harmful.
What I meant is that you want to try different things which will enhance or develop your skills and abilities.
Like?
For example, a few months ago, I started a karate class, which I
nice.
Haven't really done before, okay, with
oh
my,
my
son.
Gosh.
With my
yeah.
son. We both go together, okay? And before I started that class, I would say I'd never been in a fight. You know, I was afraid of even standing in front of someone. But after being in that class and practicing fighting others, I've gained a lot of... I didn't realize I could do that, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of your abilities and the thing that you can do is only going to be done when you put yourself in that situation.
I get
right?
it.
So develop new skills. Learning new things will show you your abilities. That's what I meant. Like, have you tried new things in your life which you realize, hey, yeah, I can actually do this, and you went forward in it?
Yeah, I knew this experience. You know, I took some language classes in Germany and French and so on. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that I have this ability to talk this beautiful different language. So sometimes you have to go through that. Go, you know, within the process of self-development.
Time for a break right now, and
unfortunately,
we'll be back to discuss the rest of this topic.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Okay, so we're back and we were discussing, you know, trying out different skills. A big part of it, obviously, learning about your own self is you have to be patient, right?
Yeah.
Without patience, if you're in a hurry, you're going to end up making mistakes. And that may be good for you to be able to learn about yourselves, but a lot of it has to do with being patient.
You know, I do agree with this part that we need patience in our life. But the point is, sometimes I misunderstand just being scared of going through something mm-hmm. with patience. Sometimes I feel like I'm staying in my comfort zone more than what I should do. Okay? Right. And I maybe misunderstand this with the feeling of patience. And uh-huh. I cannot differentiate between these two.
One thing that I feel can help, by the way, in today's world, you know, we have experts in everything, right?
Yeah.
We have people that are experts. And before I started studying psychology, I thought psychology dealt with, like, you know, mental health issues and people that are sick.
Yeah.
But now that I'm studying it, I've actually realized it's not only about that. Psychology deals with expertise, right? Yeah. With knowledge. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be sick. It just means that you need someone who has more knowledge than you. So what I'm trying to get to is that for anything today, you'll be able to find someone who's specialized in that and they can help you in that area of your life.
Yeah.
And I've started believing in really seeking help from them because I've learned so much from these experts. And why not use them? Why not use people that have more knowledge than you?
Yeah.
And that's one of the beauty, by the way, of living in Iran is that Iran has amazing experts in whichever field you want to go into. I have not found people like these in other parts of the world, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So I would say that's one way you can go about is go to an expert, learn from them. They will teach you and guide you the way to do things.
You know, I always have this idea. If, for example, I cannot solve my own problem, then who can solve it? So this point of view always actually limited me from going to doctor's expertise and therapy or something like that. And
yeah.
I do not believe in those sort of things.
Yeah, I would say some therapists may be useless or they may not be able to help you.
They
for
want
example.
Money.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. But if you can find a good yeah. person, like one of my teachers, he's amazing, right?
Yeah, I know some
I'm not saying just go to anyone, go to people who are recommended, just like when you would go to a doctor, you would find the best doctor, you would ask for references, things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is one of the ways to find out your problems, your capabilities, and so many other things. Sometimes you don't know what you should do. You are in a situation, you are in a difficulty that you don't know whether you have to be patient or you have to do something about it or you have to fight against it. You know, because we have so many verses that sometimes there is a wisdom behind whatever that are happening to you, okay?
Yes.
This is a test for you.
Yes.
So sometimes you may feel like, I don't know, what should I do?
Yeah, and that can create stress, that can create anxiety
for sure.
in your life, right? And I can tell you that anxiety and stress, part of it is healthy. Part of it we need
nice.
In order for us to survive.
Yeah.
Right? If we didn't have a little bit of stress and a little bit of anxiety in our lives, we wouldn't be able to continue, for example, with our lives as well as we do. But a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress can also harm your life, right? So you're trying to say, what do we do about it, right? How do we figure that out?
Exactly.
So one of my teachers, one of the solutions that he said is to plan for your life. He said, people who don't plan, he said, let's say, look, you're about to run out of money and now you're out of money and now you're going to be even more stressful. Why not start planning beforehand, right? Go
yeah.
start looking for work, start looking for skills, start talking to people, start planning out your day. That's one way to realize what your own, that self-awareness is to bring
really
it in your
too.
You know, your ability. That's what I would say to that is to do that. It's not easy, by the way. It's not an easy thing
know,
to
it's
do.
It's a really difficult task
yeah.
because I went through it. And, you know, we have to have a structure for sure for everything. And specifically for you, Station. And as our structure goes.
I keep forgetting that we have to go for a break. We'll be right back. All right, so we're back and we're having a pretty interesting and deep discussion about, you know, how to sort of manage our abilities, our skills, and how to start applying them to live a good life while we are patient in that, right? And I can tell you that one of the points that you mentioned at the very beginning about making mistakes,
yeah,
you have to realize that whatever you try to do in life, you're going to end up making mistakes, right? And a lot of times that can create impatience in people.
Nice.
That can create impatience. But you have to realize that you have to be able to look past that and keep trying. Never give up and just keep trying to do better. That's That's one way you can go about making things better, I think, and living your life.
In my opinion, one of the things that is really important is about the self-esteem and the self-belief that you have about yourself. And you know, we're living in a world full of elements, full of standards, full of everything, every materialistic thing, celebrities, social medias, from all the aspects of our life, these kind of things are invading you. And, you know, they want you to be something that you may not be. And they have their own standards. And they are making these standards to gain money, nothing more, nothing less. Right. But you get trapped in this kind of deceiving game, okay?
Right.
And this is really sad, I think. This is something that happens to everyone. Even me, myself, I had this experience that, you know, I'm studying at university. And this semester, about like half of the girls in my class had the nose surgery. And, you know, beauty nose surgery and or rhinoplasty. And I was like, oh, come on. So maybe there is, I don't know, a trend, something that I have to follow either. Uh-huh. And, you know, we cannot resist this feeling of lacking self-esteem and self-confidence.
Right. Yeah. A big part of that is having unrealistic expectations or having an unrealistic.
Maybe idealistic, yeah.
I mean, what you were talking about, celebrities and like social media, that creates unrealistic standards in society, right? Social media creates an unrealistic standard of beauty, for example.
So it stops you from knowing more about yourself and your capabilities.
Once you actually enter real life, you know, let's say a lot of these people that are getting surgeries, for example, they're probably doing it because they want to look beautiful to the world, right? And they want to look perfect. And they're thinking, for example, I remember even when I wasn't married, right, from my own, I had this idea that you have to look perfect, for example, right?
Yeah.
Once you get married and you start living together with the other, you realize that the looks aren't that important, right? You realize there's much more than just the looks. What I'm saying is, why did I think that way? Because I was watching movies. I was watching like these shows which created this unrealistic notion of marriage or love or what, you know, what beauty is. And in order to get away from all that, you have to create realistic, you have to have a realistic view of the world and these kind of things, right?
I think you have to work on your spiritual part of your life so much. And, you know, you have to understand that appearance is not everything. After a long time, a kind of long relationship or communication that you have with someone, I think the least important thing is exactly appearance. And there are other things, specifically your personality, that, you know, shines bright there in the eyes of other people that are connected to you. But it's a really, really difficult task to convince yourself into this, to understand that you have to know more about your capabilities, and your capabilities have nothing to do with your appearance.
Right, right. But I can tell you that, of course, I'm not saying that it's not important, by the way.
It is.
Okay. It is important, but everything has to be prioritized, right?
Yeah.
What are the most important things? And getting back to like the topic is about, you know, what we're discussing is self-awareness and knowing our abilities. And for that, you have to have a realistic idea, not only about other people, but also about yourself, right?
Yeah.
You can't have unrealistic expectations from yourself. It's very important. Okay, so just some final thoughts, you know, just before finishing. The most important part about, I think, self-awareness, for me, the advice would be is to try new things, learn new things, and you'll realize that you're actually capable of doing that, and being patient in that, and having realistic expectations from yourself and others.
And let me add the last thing, rather.
Yeah.
And I think before being aware about yourself, you have to accept whatever you are. And this self-acceptance is one of the first steps that you have to take in order to know more about yourself and your capabilities.
Definitely.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode of Youth Station. Hope to talk to you again.
So, assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's decision, with Western backing, to cut off water, food, and electricity to Gaza while it carpet bombs the entire besieged enclave, is resulting in health disasters at every conceivable level. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, recently the Zionist regime dropped incendiary flares, causing fires and smoke that contain extreme chemical toxins. Videos show Palestinians trying to extinguish the fires caused by these weapons. The incendiary weapons have been dropped around hospitals and schools in Gaza, which are full of displaced people seeking refuge. Journalists are posting photos of people trying to dig by hand through the rubble of apartment buildings through heavy smoke. The Electronic Intifada's contributor, Rifat Al-Arir, posted that there is almost no visibility due to the smoke and dust. For those able to find shelter, disease is starting to rip through areas with high concentrations of people. Maha Al-Husseini reported in Middle East Eye, according to healthcare professionals, providing support to the internally displaced persons in the UNRWA schools, epidemics are spreading fast due to the lack of clean water, medicine, and hygiene products. The lack of clean water used by the Zionist regime as a weapon against Palestinians is leading many to ration as much as possible. A Twitter user, Noor Gaza, posted on X, "Today we are dividing the water into two small cups for the adults among us." She wrote, "When thirst is severe, we can just wet our lips. Children have a larger share." Noor's sister, Hoda Al-Susi, a contributor to the Electronic Intifada, was killed during the first week of the Zionist regime's attacks. In another post, Noor says that people are hoping for rain to quench their thirst, but the rain will cause distress for those who have no real shelter. With flour and other staples in a scarce supply, the Zionist regime has also bombed bakeries while many people stood in line. For women who are pregnant, essential prenatal appointments and hospital beds remain barely possible. Human Rights Watch reports that the grave risks all civilians in Gaza face from the Israeli military operations are multiplied for people with disabilities. And hospitals, 16 of which have already been shuttered due to being bombed and or a lack of fuel supplies, electricity and clean water, are bracing for a compounded catastrophe when the fuel finally runs out. According to Guardian, a fifth of bakeries supported by the UN's Agency for Palestinian Refugees in Gaza have been bombed so far, as warnings have been issued of catastrophic food shortages due to a lack of fuel. The UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, said 10 of the 50 bakeries it supplies with flour helping to lower the soaring cost of bread, have been hit in airstrikes, and fuel is running out for vehicles to transport flour to those that remain. Bread has been desperately sought after with long queues at bakeries and has become the main food for many people in the shelters, which are now housing more than 600,000 people, triple their intended capacity. Guardian added the World Food Programme, WFP, said only two bakeries it had contracted. WFP supplies flour to contracted bakeries which produce bread for distribution, and said these bakeries had enough fuel to keep their ovens going, and those that are operating were producing six times their capacity. A spokesperson said that while the WFP had been supplying an average of 200,000 people a day with bread, that dropped to 150,000 recently. The WFP spokesperson said tens of thousands of people rely on small bakeries to find a loaf of bread to bring back to their families. People risk their lives and queue for hours, but they often go home empty-handed. Adding, conditions in Gaza are desperate, food and water are running out, shelters for displaced people are massively overcrowded, and without fuel, there is no electricity, health services are collapsing. The WFP also said about 10% of shops it worked with had run out of food, and others only have 5 days of goods left, unable to restock because of damaged roads and the lack of fuel.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, avoiding shirk through obedience. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are two types of shirk, polytheism. The first one is shirk jali, which is open polytheism, open shirk, for instance, idol worshipping. The second one is shirk khafi, which is the hidden or the concealed shirk. And this is a very dangerous form of shirk. This is what we're discussing today in the light of obedience to creator. When one obeys other than Allah and disobeys Allah, one falls into the shirk, the polytheism, through obedience. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran chapter 20, verse number 81 and 82 says, "And they have taken gods besides Allah, that they should be to them a source of strength. By no means
They shall soon deny their worshipping them, and they shall be adversaries to them. Concerning this verse, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, said, "The word worship here in this verse does not mean bowing and prostrating for prayer. Rather, it is obedience to men, obedience to other than Allah. Anyone who obeys a creature and disobeys the creator actually worships him." So the whole concept of worship that we have in our mind is just some ritualistic practices, you know. For instance, praying five times a day and, you know, bowing down in front of someone, or doing sajda or prostration in front of someone. Well, while this is worshiping, but the concept of worshiping is wider than that. If you obey someone, you are effectively, for all practical purposes, worshiping that person. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing shirk through obedience, and specifically we are talking about obedience to the creator. Now, you may say that, yes, obedience to creator does not make sense conceptually, but practically speaking, brothers and sisters, a lot of times we do things to please others, you know, other human beings. And this is where Islam is very sensitive about, especially if that pleasing of others is coming at a cost of displeasing Allah, right? Now, you may ask, parents are a creatures other than Allah as well. Should we not obey them? Well, let's turn towards Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, who wrote to Ma'mun, "To do good to the parents is a religious duty, even if they are disbelievers. But when it is a cause for the disobedience of Allah, neither they nor other people should be obeyed, because no obedience to any creature is allowed when it is a disobedience to the Creator." End quote. So Imam Ridha alayhi salam is clearly informing us, brothers and sisters, that, you know, do not be caught up in this trap of shaitan that, oh, since they are my elders, since they are my parents, since they are my teachers, you know, I have to listen to them and obey them. No, it's not that simple. You have to make sure that what they're asking for is in line with the obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You cannot just make these people happy at the cost of making Allah unhappy. If the obedience of parents is in line with the obedience to Allah, we must listen to them. We're not allowed to be angry at them. The Quran says, don't even say uff, which means do not say or make a slightest and the lightest of gestures to show your unwillingness or unhappiness towards your parents. But if it comes at the cost of making Allah unhappy, this is where Islam expects you to not obey them in that particular instance.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Zionist settlers threaten Palestinians at gunpoint, vandalize their property, hamper their access to water, ruin their trees, damage their vehicles. steal their belongings, and intimidate and physically attack them. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Wafa News Agency, Zionist colonial settlers guarded by an Israeli army force brutally assaulted a group of Palestinian farmers recently and stole their olive harvest and their tractor in the Masafer Yatta region to the south of Al-Khalil in the occupied West Bank. Rateb Jabour, a local Palestinian activist, told Wafa that a group of colonial Zionist settlers assaulted members of the Palestinian family of Mesef while they were harvesting olives in their own land located in Kherbet, Kweps hamlet in Masafer Yatta. He added that the settlers stole the farmers' olive harvest and their tractor. Also, shortly after, armed Zionist settlers threatened to kill them if they did not leave. 24 Palestinian households, totaling 141 people, half of whom are children, were displaced from Kherbat Zanuta in the southern West Bank. On October 28, the families dismantled about 50 residential and animal structures and vacated the area with their 5,000 livestock. The Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has previously documented settler attacks in this community, most recently on 12, 21st and 26th of October. About two-thirds of the families that comprise this community are now displaced. The Electronic Intifada also wrote, since October 7th, Zionist settlers have been organizing attacks against Palestinian herding communities to drive them off their land. Zionist settlers and access restrictions enforced by Zionist occupation military forces have driven nearly 800 Palestinians out of their homes and communities since October 7th, and that's according to UN Monitoring Group, OCHA. That's almost 100 households in 15 different herding and Bedouin communities. Zionist settlers threatened Palestinians at gunpoint, vandalized their property, hampered their access to water, ruined their trees, damaged their vehicles, steal their belongings, and intimidate and physically attack them. Zionist settlers even hung dolls splattered with red, resembling blood, near a Palestinian children's school west of Ariha in the occupied West Bank's Jordan Valley to intimidate and threaten them. This forces Palestinian communities, which are comprised largely of families and children, to leave their areas in fear of deadly attacks. Israeli human rights groups recently said in a statement, many more are in danger of being forced to flee in the coming days if immediate action is not taken. They sounded the alarm over what they described as a state-backed wave of settler violence, which has led and is leading to forcible transfer of Palestinian communities in the West Bank. The Zionist regime government actively supports settler attacks against Palestinians and does nothing to stop them, the human rights group said, adding, government ministers and other officials are backing the violence, and in many cases the military is present or even participates in the violence, indulging in incidents where settlers have killed Palestinians. The Zionist regime's national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has been distributing weapons to the Zionist civilians, including those who live in Jewish-only settlements in the occupied West Bank. Zionist settlers carried out nearly 140 attacks against Palestinians since October 7th, as per by OCHA. These figures include injuries against Palestinians as well as property damage. OCHA said more than one-third of attacks involve settler threatening Palestinians with firearms, including shootings. During half of these attacks, the Zionist occupation forces escorted settlers or actively participated in the attacks. Beth Salem said in the context of one incident, "This is how state exploits the fighting in Gaza to promote forcible transfer in the West Bank." At least 7 Palestinians were killed by Zionist settlers who have been deputized by the Zionist regime's top leadership to carry out programs. A big focus of forcible displacement has been the herding communities in the south of Al-Khalil Hills. Nearly 4,000 Palestinians live in farming and herding communities in south Al-Khalil Hills, which lies in the so-called Area C, the 60% of the West Bank, and that remains under full Israeli regime military control and includes the Zionist regime's largest settlements. The Zionist regime enforces a near-total ban on Palestinian construction in Area C, forcing Palestinians to build without permits and live in constant fear that their homes would be demolished by the Zionist regime's bulldozers. The Zionist regime army also employs what appears to be a policy of non-enforcement against settler violence in those areas. Zionist settlers are treated as civilians under Israeli regime law, while Palestinians are subjugated to oppressive military rule. Zionist settlers also attack Palestinian communities with near-total impunity and often with the help and escort of occupation forces. This is part of the Zionist regime's relentless efforts to change the demographics in the area to ensure a Zionist majority. The fabricated regime of Israel, working hand in glove with its settlers, push Palestinians off their land to establish facts on the ground and ultimately annex those areas.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with President Raisi and his cabinet on August 30, 2023, on the occasion of Government Week. Another point is that we must identify the country's needs at the right time. Domestic producers can provide our domestic needs in most of the areas required in the country. However, this is provided that needs are recognized in time and when necessary. Another important point is that in the 7th National Development Plan, many tasks have been assigned to the government. God willing, planning should be carried out in such a way that all of these tasks can be accomplished. Nonetheless, there are a few important points that you should consider in carrying out this program. You need to keep these points in mind for every task that you perform and in every economic decision that you make. For example, consider the issue of justice and reducing the gap between economic classes. This is a very important issue. In every economic decision that you make, look to see how it will affect the issue of reducing this gap. Will it have a positive or negative effect? Analyze this. As for other examples, consider market stability, reducing inflation, stability in the exchange rate, and increase in production. These are all important points, and they are quantitative. That is, they are measurable. They are not things that we cannot calculate.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
When you make decisions, consider the effect it will have on these indicators. Depending on the effect it has on the indicators, you should decide whether to do it or not. This is also very important. Another issue, which is the last issue in this area, is the issue of people's livelihood. The issue of livelihood is very important. When there are problems in the area of people's livelihood, such as high housing prices, high rent, and such things, which definitely causes some people to feel desperate, all the good things you do become overshadowed by this. All the positive measures that are taken and all this effort remains unseen due to the problems in people's livelihood. And this is truly unfortunate. Work on this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Supporters of Palestine rallied in Seoul on Saturday as the Israeli regime's indiscriminate air and ground assault on Gaza rages on. Those from the region tried to put the current conflict into context.
Killings, displacement, and mass arrests in the West Bank are not new. While we are seeing an intensification in these kinds of attacks at the current moment, we know that this is a demonstration of life under the occupation.
South Koreans are getting the message as news of Israeli bombings of hospitals and schools, termed by many as war crimes, has traveled around the world.
Civilians are dying brutally. The US and Israel have rejected the UN proposed humanitarian aid. It was a humanitarian truce to bring aid into Gaza, but the United States and Israel vetoed it.
Experts say social media has been critical in communicating the reality of events mass media reported with bias.
The media coverage is pretty asymmetrical. Especially here, it is very difficult to know the real voices from Palestinians. However, concerned citizens and civic organizations translate a lot of articles, so we were still able to make the voices heard.
As Palestinian supporters marched toward the Israeli embassy, police blocked their pre-approved route, apparently at the request of the Israeli embassy. Meanwhile, another rally in support of Palestine started up nearby.
The solidarity with Palestine expressed here in South Korea and on the streets around the world is having something of an effect. The unconditional backing of Israel among its allies, in particular the U.S., is declining amid these resounding demands for a ceasefire. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Stricken by grief for innocent Palestinian lives that have been cut short. Dreams perished, generations wiped out in Israel's brutal bombing campaign in Gaza.
Thousands of kids are dying. Thousands. Innocent. There's an unborn child there, my friend. Unborn.
I think we're witnessing a genocide, personally, and there's nothing else that we can do but get out here and make our voices heard, because our government doesn't represent us on this.
They're killing innocents, children, women, everyone.
It's the fourth pro-Palestine mass demonstration in as many weeks, bringing together people of different religious backgrounds. Glenn Secker is the National Secretary for the Jewish Voice for Labour in London.
What we think is happening is unbelievably atrocious. It's a gross violation of human rights, they're war crimes, and what's happening now actually is genocide.
For the fourth Saturday in a row, Britons here in the UK have taken to the streets to protest Israel's ongoing slaughter in Gaza. Here in London, they're calling not only for an immediate ceasefire, but also on the government to withdraw its support for the Israeli regime.
They also asked for the root causes of the decades-old conflict to be addressed.
And that is Israel's ongoing military occupation, imposition of apartheid, and our government's complicity in supporting that system of oppression. And that must end.
A protest was also supposed to take place outside the Israeli embassy, but was cancelled by police under the controversial public orders legislation.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. They'll protect the government that's committing horrific war crimes and not allow people to speak their minds. And no doubt the police will crack down in a brutal way if anything gets too big.
In other European cities, too, demonstrators got their voices heard, despite government restrictions. Organizers here say there are more marches planned for the coming weeks. Will the people in power heed the call that so many here are making for an end to the bloodshed? Saeed Pourreza, London.
After nearly a month of bans on pro-Palestinian demonstrations around France, a march across Paris to denounce Israel's shocking atrocities in Gaza was finally permitted. Activists have endured mass arrests, a record number of fines, the usual French police brutality, and more, but many say it's nothing compared to what Gazans are being forced to endure.
Israel has to start respecting international law. They must stop these massacres and bombardments. Everyone in the world, including in Tel Aviv, must get out and demonstrate right now against this imperialism which victimizes everybody it touches.
Tens of thousands of people flooded the streets with intense anger at President Emmanuel Macron's seemingly unconditional support for Tel Aviv, despite the massacre of nearly 10,000 people, 70% of them women and children.
Israel and the West want to colonize and dominate the entire Arab world. But that time is over. Palestine's time for freedom is now. I blame the corrupt Arab puppets and collaborators, like in Morocco, Egypt, Jordan, and Bahrain. But let's not leave out our own president.
France has an extremely large Lebanese community, and many of them marched for what they said are obvious reasons.
I'm a Lebanese Christian, and we know that the Palestinian cause is also the cause of Lebanon as well. If Gaza falls, it's certain that Israel would come after us next, because that is the expansionist nature of Zionism.
4 years ago, Macron forced through a bill which attempted to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, despite the obvious differences between the two. This week, a group of French senators introduced a bill which would make any anti-Zionism a felony crime punishable by